the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I have Matt Moore, a healthy Matt Moore, I would say, right? You sound healthy.
Well, I'm coughing up stuff that's like borderline black, so I wouldn't say so.
Well, that's the first step to health. that shows you have a good immune system.
You know what they say, a black lung a day means you're a blogger someday.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what they say. A black lung a day means you've got 3 to 6 months to live. So you're just going to miss the NBA Finals.
Just going to miss them. Shame, too.
A lot of action in the league last night.
There was a lot of action.
A lot of action. I want to start out by talking about the Golden State Warriors, who, I mean, this team, I think it was, you know, they're catching the Clippers a little bit coming off the high of a win streak, and you see this with teams, you know, they'll go on a big win streak and then they lose a couple of games in a row and then they get their, you know, they get their bearings back and everything. And that's not to discredit what the Warriors did. I loved how they played defense. I mean, their pick and roll defense last night was phenomenal. They rotated, they knew where Chris Paul was going to go, and they rotated, and they played it so well that he got pissed off. He got legitimately pissed off, dunked twice in the game, got really physical with them, and I'm really happy that they were allowed to be so physical on the perimeter, because I think it just makes for a better game. You could have easily seen that game taken over by whistles, and I love the flow of it. I love the grittiness of it. Like, that was just a fun basketball game, and it was a blowout. It was a fun blowout.
Chris Paul had 23 points on 12 shots, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, and it felt like a terrible game.
Yeah. I mean, there was that stretch, like, in the third quarter and then a little bit into the fourth where he really just turned it on and was incredible, and it didn't matter. I mean, they cut the lead to, like, 10 or 12, but the Warriors just kept hammering him.
I like the model because it's, you know, Jackson's managed to marry. It's like he realized, okay, we need to slow things down defensively, but we need to not take away their ability to score in transition because we've got shooters and fast guys.
Right.
So it needs to be getting back on defense is priority number one. Getting the stop is priority number two. Running is number three. And then we'll go from there.
I literally just posted right before we started on Mark Jackson how, I mean, last year he was a joke. People were laughing at the hire. Throughout the first year, they're saying, oh, this guy can't coach at all. Look at him, he can't coach. He was thrown into a chaotic situation with the lockout, injuries. You know, they're basically tanks to keep their draft pick so they end up with Harrison Barnes. And in the process, he's gotten everyone to buy into what he's doing. And they don't even have Andrew Bogut back. And they're off to their best start since, I think, 91-92. And this is just an incredible teaching experience that has really, I mean, you can see that they buy into what they're doing, they trust that it's going to work, and that's what's happening, and that is coaching. That is what coaches do. They get you to buy into their philosophy, they get you to execute on both ends, and he's been a fantastic coach this year. It's not a laughing matter anymore.
I told Warrior World on their podcast before the season started, I said that if the talent on this team works together, Jackson's a coach that can make a good team great. He could also make a bad team horrible, I think.
Yeah.
That's kind of the kind of coach that Jackson is. I think that I don't think that Jackson's job here has been – it's been great. And it's been – I mean, it's obviously great because I think he's coach of the year candidate worthy. But I do think that a lot of it is he's a coach that if you give him talent is going to succeed. And he's done that. And that's – there's something to be said. You didn't give a lot of coaches talent. They're not going to do a lot with it. You
know? Right. I mean, there are a lot of coaches in this league who
– Mike Brown.
Right. Apparently Mike D'Antoni.
But not Bernie Bickerstaff.
No, Bernie Bickerstaff and PJ Carlissimo. I mean, are they the greatest interim coaches of all time?
Of all time.
It's just I like seeing it's they have the right mix of young players and veterans. And that's such a key thing. I mean, when you see a team rebuild, it's always they build all of these young players together, but it doesn't work out a lot of the times because young guys don't know how to play. You know, they can get by on raw ability sometimes, but they don't know how to play, and you have to mix in veterans to have this good balance of energy, skill, and just basketball intelligence. And with Carl Landry and Jarrett Jack coming onto the team, there's so much experience and so much intelligence coming off that bench that it calms everything down while ramping it up in a way. And it's just, you know, you can have as many young assets as you want, but it doesn't matter if they don't know how to play in the NBA. They know how to play basketball, but the NBA is a completely different game.
See, and it's funny you say that because I thought Harrison Barnes was fantastic last night.
Oh yeah, and he's a guy that I think you can see will get it really quickly. I know David Thorpe just raved about his defensive potential in summer league and in preseason, and he's one of those guys that I don't know that he'll ever, aside from when he detonated Nikola Pekovic, I don't know that he'll always do these spectacular plays to really wow you, but you come away from each game, regardless of what the stats say, thinking like, this guy played a very good game.
24-13-7 for David Lee, 31-6-8 for Steph Curry. He thinks they should both be All-Stars. Jackson does.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to say that because it's his guys. The thing is like, there's always like 20 guys that should be on the 12-man All-Star roster.
Right.
So, yeah, they probably should be All-Stars. If they're not, I don't think it's a crime, depending on how the next month goes. But that's the thing, is people are like, oh, this guy got snubbed. No, there's just, sometimes there are just not enough spots.
I went to the West Guards, and there's no chance for Curry.
It seems really unlikely.
I mean, it's, if you're going to take him over Tony Parker, you're making a mistake. You just are.
Yeah, probably. You coming around on Tony Parker, let's talk about this.
I'm doing a video for 4-Point Play today. That guy's amazing.
He's really good, and
he's really good.
He was really good last year. I was surprised that you kind of discounted what he did last year. I thought he was.
Oh no, last year he was not that good, but this year he's really awesome.
Completely disagree with you on that.
No, I mean, I do want to go back to the Warriors for 1 second though. The final score is 115-94.
Yeah.
Steph Curry played 43 minutes, 9 seconds. David Lee plays 40 minutes, 20 seconds. Klay Thompson plays 35.
Seems like a lot of minutes for a blowout.
Jackson rubbed that damn game in.
Yeah.
I mean, they rubbed tons of salt in that wound. And they played the Clippers on Saturday, and the Clippers are coming off back-to-back again. That's what sucks for them, is the Clippers are coming off of a back-to-back on Saturday. They put the Lakers on Friday and the Warriors on Saturday.
I mean, they did end the game on like an 11-2 run or something like that. So maybe it got out of hand at the end. No, I mean, there was no reason to play
those guys.
I mean, you know me. I like it when guys are mean in the NBA. And it's not something to do all the time, but against a division foe that you are blowing out, that was just the talk of December. The fact that you can go in there and just rub a little salt into that wound and really, really show them that you're enjoying this dismantling of their team, that's a nice little psychological edge that brings up some drama later on.
I think it's dangerous.
Well, sure, it's dangerous, but that, I mean, you know, sometimes
Chris Paul's not a guy I want to have a vendetta against me.
No, but if you can shut down everybody else like they did last night, I mean, Blake Griffin looked awful. What was crazy was I had a Clippers fan say, "Is Blake Griffin showing his true colors?" And I was like, "What does that even mean?" He's like, he doesn't do anything outside of dunking, and his low post is terrible. I was like, he's 17th. Synergy has him 17th in post up, and he's been a phenomenal mid range shooter all season. He's like, yeah, but he can't hit anything now. The last couple games, I was like, granted, this was at halftime of the game. I was like, granted, his last six quarters have been horrible. The previous 16 games, he shot 50% or better. Like, right. I don't think this is indicative of who he is.
He did look banged up though.
Yeah,
he looks to me like he's banged up.
Yeah.
So. Oh, reminded me of the Spurs series, honestly.
That three pointer he hits the side of the backboard in the Warriors bench. That was phenomenal.
man, the Warriors, wow. I mean, they, again, these two faces each other in the playoffs. We're going to see some epic taunting of one another.
Oh, these are the two teams to do it.
So Tony Parker, yeah, I'm doing all this stuff for 4-Point Play, and he's been, I think the thing I'm most impressed with, he drives left side wing into the paint, goes right by his guy because nobody can get in front of him. And there's a guy in the left corner wing, and he somehow does a one-handed foot pass behind his own head.
Yeah.
And I've watched it like 7 times. I still don't know how he did it. I don't know how it's physically possible.
He's talented.
Yeah, he is. He has a little bit of talent.
Yeah.
You know who's also got a little bit of talent? It's LeBron James, who was phenomenal last night.
I didn't watch the game when it was live, but I went back at the end of the night and I watched the fourth quarter in overtime. Good God.
I don't know what you do. Like, he just decides games are over.
Holy water and garlic. That's what you do.
And he very well could have hit that last jumper, too.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's just so fun to see a guy decide a game is over.
It really is.
Decide that they're not going to lose. Like, regardless of what people think about LeBron James, there's just something that is really, really cool about seeing a guy say, nah, I want to win this game. And then you get into, well, why does he do that every game? You can't do that every game. The NBA is too hard. It's too exhausting. But there are moments in the season where you can pick your spot and say, all right, this is it. I'm done with this losing thing.
And he's picking them a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
A stupid streak wash, though. This 20-point game thing, I'm already annoyed with.
Oh, I can't stand that stuff.
Like, he's got 20-odd games of 20 points or more to start a season, and the record's 45.
Here's the thing. It's not a record if nobody knows it. It was like with the assist record, the double-digit assist streak that Rondo was going up for a while, and he was like, I don't know, he caught Magic Johnson, or he had to catch Magic Johnson. I don't know what he did. He caught somebody. And it's like, no one knew about this streak before the season.
Right.
Like, this is not a thing.
Although Rajon Rondo did have double-digit assists last night.
Yeah, I mean, the return of Avery Bradley was a success for for the first 12 minutes of the game. I mean, they won those 12 minutes.
Barely, that's the funny part. Like, they took the lead like right before the quarter end. I really thought the Grizzlies were going to lose that game. I was positive Memphis was going to lose. I'm just so conditioned to Memphis losing those types of games.
You know what? I don't even want to hear this. Like, that was such a classic reverse jinx by you in yesterday's podcast. And to pretend otherwise is just insulting to our intelligence.
That was such a
classic reverse jinx. How dare you? Oh Lord. I really hope the Celtics don't come out and make a fool of me. You knew they weren't going to make a fool of you. You knew the matchups.
I didn't expect Mike Conley to have 23 points and 9 assists, 1 turnover.
No, he was great, and you know, Bradley really played incredible defense on him to start the game. and there was that moment. I think it was in the first quarter, maybe it was the second quarter, but he came down like just to the right of the free throw line, and he hit this like between the legs and back crossover, and then had like this little shimmy for a layup, and it was like, it was such a quick move that you were kind of like, whoa, like that's incredible. And it was from that point on, it kind of freed him up, and he was just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, when he gets aggressive, he starts going to the basket like that, it gets really hard to stop him, because then you lose him going around screens and that kind of stuff. He talked about that in the interview I did with him. Avery Bradley minus 12, so.
He did, I mean, you can't expect a ton from him in the first game back. I really did like the way he defended to start the game, but he just looked like he ran out of gas. And
there's nothing about Bradley. It's just a simple matter of like he's not going to save you.
Yeah.
You know, Jason Terry had 8 points on 5 shots.
Jeff Green, 10 points on 5 shots, 15 minutes.
Jared Sullinger is being trumpeted because of his positive plus-minus. He had 2 points on 6 shots. Because that's, you can just tell the difference he made there. Jeff Green was efficient. Gordon Lee had a really great start to the game, and then Doc went away from him, and he never really got his confidence back.
Yeah. He hardly played.
You know what? The biggest thing in that game, actually, was the Grizzlies' defense of Garnett in the post.
Yeah. Garnett couldn't get anything going, and if Paul Pierce isn't getting free for 3-point shots, what the hell does he do out there? He's really not doing anything.
He had 12 in that first quarter, and I was like, oh, God. I was like, Paul Pierce about to troll the daylights out of me. Even as I was, because it was weird, because it was like he was hitting these open threes and the trailers, and that's what I always say. I'm like, he can hit those. And he hit like a layup, but he also, I have a gif up this morning. He drove the length of the court off of a free throw miss. He rebounded, drove the length of the court, drove baseline, and then tried for like a finger roll, and it went straight up in the air and airballed.
I mean, do you know how long a basketball court is? At 94 feet? That's a lot to run for an old guy. You get tired. You get winded.
So old.
Yeah.
But yeah, when Garnett's not able to just do what he wants, they have severe problems. And you can tell, like, it really surprises Garnett when he runs up against guys that can do it. Because, like, Marc Gasol was like, no, old man. No.
Yeah, I mean, Gasol is quicker and stronger than Garnett. And that's, you know, you really have to get free for jumpers. And you really, I mean, that's where the system has to get you through offensively if you're KG in that matchup, especially on a night where it just didn't look like he had his legs.
Yeah, here's what's crazy, though, is the Grizzlies won that game, and Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph combined for 11 points on 15 shots.
Yeah.
You know, Darrell Arthur was huge. Maurice Spates was huge. They killed him with that mid-range pick-and-pop game.
Should we talk about Darrell Arthur becoming the greatest three-point shooter of all time?
We really should. I mean, I think he's earned it.
Yeah.
I think he's put in the work. I'm so happy for that kid. I mean, he busted his ass to get back from injury. He had like an injury, worked really hard to come back from it, had another injury, worked hard to come back from it, had a good year, had another injury, worked hard to come back from it. Like, I love seeing that, because it was funny, because when I started going to Memphis games, in pregame I would notice that he was just he would stay way longer than any other player. Everybody else is gone, and he's still out there working on his mid-range jumper. And I was like, you're serious? And he's like, that's what's going to make my career. He's like, I have to be able to hit that.
Yeah.
And it was great to hear that from a player, not just be like, I'm just going to hustle and work hard.
Right.
For Darrell to be smart enough to be like, no, I have to have a set that I can actually run me off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, with him, I wonder if he just saw guys like Udonis Haslem and like, that's who I need to be.
Yep.
Like, if I'm going to stick around, that's who I've got to be.
And really, it was just Mike Conley killed him. It was Mike Conley and a little bit of Rudy Gay.
Tony Allen was fantastic.
Yeah.
Rudy had a pretty good game. And then Spates and Arthur off the bench were exactly what they needed.
Celtics just...
I think...
talk about a lot. They're not good.
Who was it? It was Celtics blog that said, like, I don't even know what to say at this point.
Yeah. That was like the closing line of the recap. I don't even know what to say anymore. And there have been the Celtics blogs. I am pretty impressed with the fact that even the ones that are usually optimistic are like, this is not good.
Yeah, this is. I don't know. I still think they're a playoff team in the East, even with all the problems.
I said last night, everyone was like, you think they're gonna make the playoffs? And I was like, yes.
Yeah, but it's like
I can acknowledge how bad they are now while also not getting caught up in the fact of how bad they are now.
And maybe the playoffs they'll be able to, you know, get to gear one. I don't know. Maybe gear two. But it's hard to see them really doing much unless the matchup is completely favorable. And I'm trying to think of the East playoff teams right now. What matchup is favorable, because they're not going to be a top four seed. Like, they're looking at New York or Miami.
If they inch up to 6 versus 3 versus Hawks.
Maybe. But even then, like, and I'm not even big on the Hawks, but I don't see that going well for them.
See, I do, just because even though I like the Hawks last year to beat them, I feel like they just had a lot of things that go against them. I just feel like Boston mentally owns that edge so much.
Yeah, maybe.
And then it's not like the Hawks have a bunch of veterans that can come in and really give them huge contributions, you know?
How dare you disparage Zaza Pachulia?
I love Zaza Pachulia. That's actually one of my favorite things about it. Zaza, like, makes KG's life a living hell when he plays.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons that I think that the Hawks would have won if healthy last year, when Zaza was out. And Zaza really pisses KG off.
He really does. He sees that size 8.5 head, and he's like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, and he doesn't put up with any of his crap. Like, Zaza just puts up with zero crap from Garnett. And it's, yeah, I think he'd be great, but somebody mentioned this the other day. Somebody asked me the other day, they're like, what's the playoff series you could see this turning out like? Anybody else remember Pistons 09 versus the Cavaliers?
Yeah.
Where a team that was a championship team and a title contender that had consistently been in the playoffs and been in the conference finals finally kind of slipped, made some roster moves, and then ran up against LeBron and just got detonated.
Are you saying that the Celtics are going to get Allen Iverson? Is this a comeback? Are you announcing the comeback?
He's more likely to save them than Avery Bradley. So, I have a question for you before we get to the rest of the games.
Yes. I already feel like this is going to be infuriating.
There's been a lot of discussion about a certain Dallas quarterback in the NFL. And his performance. And exactly how terrible he is. It should be noted that I do not like the Dallas Cowboys at all. in any way, shape, or form. Especially don't like Tony Romo. Just don't like anything about him. Don't like his face. Don't like anything. Who's the Tony Romo of the NBA?
Oh, I've been thinking long and hard about this, and I kind of think. I mean, it's the thing is it has to be on a big scale, right? Like that player has to be on a big scale, and my first inclination was, oh, it's like a Monte Ellis, Brandon Jennings type. Like, their fans are really passionate about him, they defend him, but at the same time, like, just doesn't come through, but that's too small of a scale. Is it Dwight Howard at this point? Is that Tony Romo?
No, because Dwight's actually had playoff success.
Kinda, yeah.
Dwight made the finals, and Dwight had a 40-point game in a Game 7. That was a huge moment. If he was Tony Romo in the Game 7 versus Boston, he would have had 17 turnovers. Dunked on his own basket.
I guess. I mean, that's the thing is
there
I
don't think there is one. I don't think there's a failure in the NBA big enough.
Some might say. I mean, you could kind of make the argument for Carmelo before this year, but it seems like he's changed this year, or what? I don't even know how to describe that, but. Yeah, I don't know. I still put Dwight Howard because success in the NBA, I think, in the playoffs is easier than football. Football seems very fluky.
So you're saying that winning 4 games out of 7 is easier than winning 1 game?
When you're having... I mean, it's easier in the sense that matchups tend to show themselves throughout a series. I think if you had a series of football games, like if you had to win 2 out of 3 in the playoffs for some ungodly reason, let's say they had, 4-month playoffs, and they, you had to win 2 out of 3 in the series, I think that maybe someone, one bad moment doesn't kill you. In the NBA, there is no one bad moment that kills you. So yeah, I think it's easier because of that.
I think if he had a 3-game playoff series in the NFL playoffs, Tony Romo would just somehow have double the number of interceptions and game-killing moments.
I mean, that's possible.
It's fascinating, though, right? The comparison you and I have joked about is LeBron before the 2011 or 2012 title.
Yeah, and that's just because people were unreasonable about it. See, that's the thing, is I think people have become relatively unreasonable about Tony Romo. Like, I think it's just gone a little too far.
Everyone thought that, and then last Sunday happened.
Yeah, but I mean,
because it was like, well, look, okay, he's had some bad games, but overall, like, really, it's not like you can look at a game and really like he's the only reason. It's not like they're down a certain number of points and just need one solid drive after the defense is held to be able to go down the field and score and take the lead, and he's throwing the interception to lose the game, and then it happened.
Here's what I feel like, though. I feel like it's – you're basically saying after LeBron loses the series against the Magic as a member of the Cavs, saying, see, this guy can't do it. I mean –
I would argue also that LeBron does so much more on the court, like as part of.
Well, yeah,
like,
I mean it's
that's the between football and basketball to me is like
right, but he, but here's the thing. Here's
LeBron does everything. LeBron's playing linebacker.
Right, but here's my point is that your team if your team sucks, especially in the NFL, and I don't think I mean that team's just not very good. The Cowboys. This is exactly what people wanted on a basketball podcast. The Cowboys are not that good of a team. They have some good players. Like, they've got DeMarcus Ware, they've got Dez Bryant, Jason Witten. Like, you have solid, solid players.
So all the players Tony Romo interacts with are good.
Yeah, but that's the thing is, like, if overall your team sucks, which overall the Cleveland Cavaliers were based on, you know, system and waiting for LeBron to do something back then, and, you know, Mo Williams was your second best player. That's not a recipe for long-term success.
Mo Williams says, how dare you?
Mo Williams out for 6 weeks. I'm excited for the Jamal Tinsley era.
It's back to basketball.
Yeah.
How about Brooklyn last night?
That was an impressive win. I mean, they just, you know, it looked like they were going to really Brooklyn it up in the second half. Like, OKC came storming back in the third quarter. And then Brooklyn just kind of said, no, this game's over. Like and they dominated the fourth. Just dominated.
Joe Johnson, 33.
That guy is good. People need to stop concentrating on his contract. He's not been that good this season, but he was, I would say, easily the Hawks' best player last year. Easily.
And the year before.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very, very good player in this league. And yes, he's overpaid. That doesn't mean he's not good. And while he hasn't been as good as he's been in the past this season, you know, this is the kind of stuff he does.
He's catching and shooting. If he's not going ISO, he's great.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is finding that chemistry between him and Darren Williams to where Williams is setting him up to catch and shoot more than they're just saying, hey, here's the ball, Joe.
Reggie Evans, plus +3.
Sure.
He had 3 turnovers, 6 rebounds.
I mean, that's a guy I would want to start and play 20 minutes.
1 point on 2 shots.
That's efficient. And Brooke Lopez is... That guy's good.
He's really good. He's great. I think he's the best offensive center. I said last night, someone with Royce Young, I said, I think he's the best offensive center in the league. I think he's better than Marcus Hall. I think Gasol is better for your team. I think he does more for you.
Yeah.
I think he's a better center. But we're talking about scoring capacity.
Yeah, in terms of scoring, he's the best scoring center in the league.
Yeah, maybe that's a better fit because I agree with the passing.
Yeah. They might need Russell Westbrook to have bad games in order to win. He was way too efficient last night. They don't know how to play with that.
They really don't know what to do. If he's not making everybody question why he doesn't do more when they win.
Right, exactly.
You know who's really hot right now? Toronto.
That's because Andrea Bargnani's gone.
Not Bargnani is their MVP. He's playing at such a high level right now.
He is. Know? His ability.
He's making all the hustle.
His ability to not play right now is. I mean, nobody has not played like this.
Nobody's not played like Matt Bargnani.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible. And really, you know, you can talk about Dwayne Casey getting his guys to buy in, or the process, or Terrence Ross really stepping up, or, you know, DeMar DeRozan's development, or Jose Calderon being such a great veteran. But, you know, those are all just excuses. Really, when it comes down, it's just not Bargnani.
Exactly.
That's the only reason that they're having success.
Exactly.
Raptors fans are idiots.
Wow. Whoa. That got aggressive.
Got aggressive fast.
Wow. You know who I like? I like this Terrence Ross.
Isn't he great?
It's frustrating because part of the reason he's good right now is because they can bring him along slowly and there's no real pressure on him. Like, the pressure's more on DeMar DeRozan. But his potential makes me angry at DeRozan's contract. And DeRozan's playing really well. But I just feel like Ross is a guy I would rather have long term.
Well, are you? Yeah, basically, you're excited in 3 years when they have to make a decision between DeRozan and Ross.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, they're playing really well. I want to ask you about Sam Mitchell's comments about Andrea Bargnani.
Sam Mitchell does not believe Bargnani has big boy pants, it seems like.
Sure doesn't. And which is funny because Sam Mitchell doesn't have employee pants.
Right.
Some quote selections for you. I wasn't allowed to coach Andrea the same way I was allowed to coach Jose Calderon. Mitchell told Tim and Sid on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, on Wednesday. I was a hard ass on Jose. I was hard on him, but look at the type of player he turned out to be. Because that makes sense. Not Jose's experience in the Spanish league at all. I was not allowed to be that tough on Andrea because within the organization, we felt he couldn't take it. And my whole thing was, if he can't take it, then we can't build around him. And no one thought Jose could take it, and Jose did. He also said, I think because he was the number one pick, Bargnani was, and a lot was invested in him, I think people in the organization thought my coaching style would be too tough on Andrea.
I don't understand the comparison of Jose and Andrea because to me it's like you own a nice car because you make a good living, but you're saying, hey, look, I've got this Mercedes over here because I make great bagels in the morning. Like, I know how to make myself breakfast. Like, they just don't – the two have nothing to do with each other. Like, how he coached Jose Calderon – like, Jose had this reputation in Europe of being a tough guy, like a tough-nosed guy who can take criticism, who leads a team, blah, blah, blah. And because he's a foreigner that came over here to play in the NBA, everyone just assumed, oh, he can't take it, he can't take that. Like, it's just that really – xenophobic. Yeah, it's like this xenophobic NBA analysis of the foreign guys can't take it. And because it, you know, allegedly has come true with Bargnani, you know, that doesn't prove the point necessarily, and Jose going against that really like ignorant thought doesn't disprove it in some way. You know what I mean? Like that just like I don't get how the two examples, because you had two foreigners, one got it and one didn't. Like, that doesn't really mean anything. They're different people from different countries and different positions.
I'm a little bit confused because he did all this great coaching with Jose Calderon, and how'd that Chris Bosh thing turn out?
And they made the playoffs.
Players that he drafted and that are no longer with the team.
Yeah, I mean, what he's saying about Bargnani could very well be valid. You know, I mean... It wouldn't.
But my big question is, why are we talking to Sam Mitchell about anything?
He likes to talk.
He does like to talk.
Yeah.
Nice guy.
Sure. I feel like, I don't know. I just, it's such a weird comparison to make. Like, I really don't like those comments, and it has nothing to do with Bargnani. I don't like the. Like, he basically tried to throw Jose Calderon under the bus before saying, see, he's tough. Like, just because you didn't know who he was before doesn't mean, like, you made him tough.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, you know, Mitchell, he was working as an assistant coach for the New Jersey Nets this season.
Yes.
Or actually, he was an assistant.
Last season.
I mean, when you look at the Nets, he was hired in 2010. You know, when you look at the last couple of years, the one thing you think with the New Jersey Nets is success, and if their players were really well coached.
Sure.
You know, and he's a scout now. And I just
I like him. I actually like him on TV in the studio.
Yeah, and like I've talked to him before, he's a really nice guy. I just don't understand why you're throwing a former player under the bus. Like, what?
Yeah, that seems unnecessary.
I don't get the point. And this is my whole thing with Toronto. Is I'm like, look, Andrea Bargnani has been bad. Why is he the only problem? Like. Why is it all entirely Bargnani?
Because his Bargnani-ness just emanates throughout the team. Just permeates and just saturates them with Bargnani-osity. That's fun to say.
They were telling me that they hate Bargnani more than they hated Vince Carter.
It just seems like a hateful people, which is weird because I just thought Canadians were nice. But when it comes to the Raptors, like they really get mad.
Watch hockey?
No, I don't. Never. I've never watched hockey. I like going to the games. I've been to a couple of games in my life, but no, I don't follow hockey at all.
You live in Minnesota now. You better watch that.
Nah, I got one. Hockey doesn't exist anymore. on a pro level. They got rid of it. And two, there's too much basketball going on. I don't have time. I can't learn. It was enough to learn Kirilenko and Shved. I can't learn all these Russian names. I'm xenophobic when it comes to hockey. There are too many.
We're hitting a new high point on this podcast.
There are just too many consonants.
So tonight's games. I do picks every day on CBSSports.com. You can find the picks on CBSSports.com/NBA. I'm in a huge bind, man.
Why?
It's a pick'em tonight with the Spurs at the Knicks.
Ooh.
The Knicks are in a spiral. The Spurs are on a back-to-back. I can't trust Pop. I can't trust them to not play him. I don't know what they're... It's not on national television.
Especially in a pick'em. Wow.
I went back and forth on it like 10 times last night. I think I finally took the Knicks, but I don't know.
I don't know. I kind of like the Spurs here because there's no Felton. I'll go Spurs, you go Knicks. One of us will be right.
50-50.
That's the math.
And then they'll tie.
Right. Inexplicable tie. They've just given up after overtime.
Spurs just walk off the floor. That'd be the best thing.
Carmelo's like, I got a dinner to go to.
No, like the Knicks still want to play, but Pop doesn't play the starters, and after an overtime, he's just like, no, we're done here.
Jason Kidd's just in a bathrobe for overtime.
Hopefully I'm going to be healthy enough to go catch it. Nuggets are favored by 8 over your Wolves.
They're going to slaughter the Wolves. Oh, my God. They are going to slaughter them. Wolves looked so bad last night
you're saying your confidence is high in this Wolves.
Oh, my God. Maybe it's just because I've been watching nothing but Wolves three-point shots for the last 2 days. But
you gotta stop doing that, man. Your doctor told you about that.
This is just, it's so infuriating how bad they are. By accident, they should make more threes. By like errant alley-oop passes that go into the basket. It is unbelievable how bad they are. There is no rhyme or reason for it.
What was the three-point shooting line last night versus Utah?
2 for 17.
See, you sound so exacerbated, but on Wolf Among Wolves, you were basically like, it's fine, no big deal.
I didn't say it was fine necessarily. I just like, I mean, they have since I last did like this big charting of them, they have gone up 1%. They're still under 30, but they went from like 28.7 to like 29.8.
Progress.
Yeah, like no. By the time we get to April, they'll be like a cool 30.5%. I mean, I've got this big thing coming out today. On A Wolf Among Wolves about their shooting, like they would literally be better off if they had actual wolves taking the shots.
The thing is, though, the Nuggets have nights when they can't shoot either. They went 0-22 at one point this year,
and they're still like 8% above the Wolves on the season. Minnesota just had 3 days off, and came out with absolutely no energy in Utah. I mean, they actually should be well rested for tonight's game because they didn't play last night.
They didn't try at all.
No.
See, and that makes me nervous because like you got a team that's angry about their effort last night. You know, it is a back, but you know, I don't know. 8's a high line, I think. There.
The thing is that I'm starting to wonder is like you know it's all this. Will you know once the team gets healthy? Once the team gets healthy. What if they don't?
That happens.
What if they don't get healthy and they're just a 500 team all year?
And Portland's going to the playoffs and I'm going to start drinking.
I mean, it's just, you know, Love looks like he's out of shape because of the injuries and, you know, he had the plague for a couple of weeks or whatever was wrong with him. And he just... He looks out of shape because he hasn't had time to really condition himself. And because of the Olympics, he said coming into the year that his conditioning was going to be an issue at first. And so now that's even worse. And I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking, like, he's going to be good, he's going to be bad, he's going to be good, he's going to be bad. He's going to be up and down all season. this might just be
win,
a
they can't win like that.
This just might be a season where you punt it away, essentially, and next year Love is fantastic, Rubio is healthy, and that's when they really become like a playoff contending team.
I'm sorry, is this before or after Kevin Love gets traded to the Lakers?
No, he's not getting traded for another 2 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, that's when it's going to be like Darius Morris on a sign-and-trade for Love.
And then we're going to have to keep you away from sharp objects.
Oh, no, I'm just going to murder everybody.
Portland's the 8th seed right now.
Yeah.
I'm grossed out by that.
J.J. Hickson.
I'm grossed out.
They're the 8th seed with like a negative differential.
Not good. This is not a good team.
No. The Lakers will charge ahead. Utah should charge ahead of them.
Is Dallas done?
They don't look undone. There's my analysis for you. I don't think they're this bad, but starting to wonder, even if Dirk comes back, does he have enough around him to... Yeah, I wonder if he and Mayo can exist on the same court, not like personality wise, but just stylistically.
Mayo ran a set last night where he ran around 3 picks. And Nowitzki's like hustling to get open. He got open 3 different times, and Mayo just didn't see him at any point. Just not a single one. Took an off balance layup, missed everything.
Yeah.
And Dirk had that look on his face.
It just, that I really need to go back to Australia look.
My knee.
It's really... Look how swollen it is. No, it looks good. No, it's telling you. It's swollen. It's like a softball. It's the size of a grapefruit.
People are really talking about the Lakers and the Celtics missing the playoffs.
It just seems impossible. Yeah, that's the thing.
It's January.
It's January. Who's a better team right now? Is it Boston or is it Philadelphia? I honestly don't know.
Pass.
Okay. No, neither team can pass.
I'll say Philadelphia because Drew Holiday's playing better than any player on Boston.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, it's definitely true that he's doing that, but it's probably true that that's the reason they're better.
They lost to Phoenix last night. Like, they had that big win, and they went out and lost to Phoenix.
Yeah. Not good.
Back, but still.
Michael Beasley, 2 points, 4 shots.
Brooklyn fired it. Oh, Mike. Brooklyn fired its coach, and it's still 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's still the 7th seed.
Yeah. They've gotten better.
Of course they have.
They're like 3-0, 4-0, something like that.
And then they're going to replace the coach, and it's going to go downhill.
Dude, do you think that... I'm starting to believe they won't get a new coach for the season. That'll be an off-season thing.
There's been a lot of talk about it. There's starting to be a lot of momentum towards, let's see how PJ pops it out.
Yeah. Wouldn't
it be crazy if PJ got canned in small market Oklahoma, which then took off under his interim coach, his assistant coach took over as interim, and then he goes to the Nets, a big market team, takes over, and he succeeds as interim coach. It's the circle of life.
And then
David Johnson will go somewhere and be an assistant.
And then we get a Brooklyn-Oklahoma City Finals.
I don't like that now. Nikola Vucevic. Last night, by the way.
Yeah, no, he's really good against Carlos Boozer.
Boozer also had 31 points, by the way.
Yeah, no, I thought he was fantastic against Carlos Boozer. That's something to hang your hat on. He's great. Top 10 center in the league.
20 points, 12 rebounds. He's got, somebody said the other day, he's got, they're talking about how he's got like, what, 49 points and like 42 rebounds.
Yeah.
In the last two games.
He's an all-star. He's an all-star. Yeah, I saw something, I think it was like Stephen Kay or somebody on Twitter, someone was like, who has a higher rebounding percentage right now, Dwight or Vucevic? And he's like, come on. Like, you're seriously not comparing the two, are you? This is the thing, I like Vucevic, and crazy Orlando fans are going to turn me into hating him. Like, you are going to make me hate this player because you're so ridiculous.
I'm sorry, we're talking about me and Amir Johnson? Because that's what's happening.
That's another inexplicable thing. Like, I don't understand the... Like, Amir's a fine player, but people go crazy for him.
People really do. It's the same thing with Jason Maxfield. It's this, man, it's this hustle, guys. They got a high rebound rate. People love him. People, like, the hardcore fans love rebounding for... I'm convinced it's the only reason that win shares, like, has any sort of, like, relevance at all.
Except when Kevin Love does it, then it's selfish rebounding.
Of course, naturally. what else we got? You like the Spurs tonight, and you like the Nuggets.
The Nuggets are going to destroy the Timberwolves. Absolutely destroy.
The over-under is 202.5, by the way.
I might go under just because the Timberwolves can't score.
Can't shoot.
Yeah, they can't shoot at all. So, if you cannot make shots...
When I watch Jose Barea shoot like 9 of 9 from 3 tonight, I'm just going to text you. I'm just going to text you constantly during the... And we're gonna be talking on our campfire thing on our chat program online. Yeah. I'm still going to text you.
I'm just going to send you back like just pictures of two middle fingers blazing.
Okay. Well, I think this is a good podcast.
Yeah, I don't know if it was good, but it was a podcast.
Something.
Yeah, it was something. It took 47 minutes of your day.
Good's such a strong word.
Yes, it's. I don't like to really pat ourselves on the back here.
That's really kind of where we're at. Is Nikola Vucevic good? Yeah, good. Such a strong word.
Yeah, he's there.
Are the Raptors good? Good's such a strong word. You guys named the podcast. Good's such a strong word.
Yeah, that's probably it. And then I'll get to explain that one.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, Matt. Have a good night.